this is gonna get ugly, so I'm just gonna go for a really long jog.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 3, No Time for Sperm Banks. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
I don't know if anybody else heard that in Short Round's voice from Temple of Doom, but I sure did.
Dr. Jones.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
We want to tell you, first of all, before we get into it, what's happening on our Patreon, which is, of course, patreon.com/againwiththis. First, episode 122, dropping December 2nd. Let's watch Marcia Cross in the season 3 Christmas episode of Desperate Housewives. Specifically, that is Desperate Housewives season 3, episode 10, The Miracle Song. It is on Hulu. We'll link it in the show notes. That, of course, also stars Doug Savant and season 1 returning stalker Matt Ruff plays another creep in this one. We'll get into it over at the Patreon, so join us there. You'll get that at any level of support.
And for our Patreons at the $5 level and up, the November episode of Again With Them, which is our monthly recap digest of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210 OMG, drops December 1st. This will be the last Again With Them of 2022. We will, of course, also be covering the December episodes, but because we're going to be off at the end of the month, we'll drop another Again With Them when we are back at our desks January 12th, and that will cover however many OMGs they drop between December 1 and January 10. And good God, let us hope Jenny and Tori make iHeart, let them take some time off so they can give our asses a break as well.
Honest to God. One more thing. If you fast forward through the outros, and why would you do such a thing? You have been missing our calls for you to call us. We are going to be dropping another call-in episode in December. We're going to be dropping another call-in episode in December, specifically on December 26th, Boxing Day, for all of us who are Commonwealthers in our hearts. But we can't do that unless you call in or text. And the number, once again, is 210-920-4699. That is, of course, 210-920-4699. You still have time to get your calls in and be part of the December call-in episode. So do anything that's on your mind, literally, we want to talk about it. So call us, 210.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
I tried to figure out how to make that our outgoing message on our Google Voice line, and I couldn't. It basically would require me to, like, play it on my phone and hold that up to, like, my computer mic. There's no way, which is dumb. But anyway, pretend that's our outgoing message, even though it's not. 210-920-4699. Shall we get into this episode before I add that patreon.com/againwiththis is where you find all of our Patreon stuff?
Yes.
Let's start with our B-plot. Amanda's new business venture gets messy. At the table in his apartment, Billy is working on a laptop with a huge sticker of a sort I never saw in the year 1997. Please let this be one of the things that you call in about after you see it in the visual aids, because it looks like a jealous skin or something like what we do now. But I don't think people were doing it in 1997, and I couldn't tell if that was just like the brand of the computer. It's very strange. Anyway. Sam comes out of the bedroom. She's whining that she knows that Billy pulled an all-nighter, but she has to talk to him. Well, tough shit for her, because his business is more important. He's meeting with Peter this morning because Peter wants to finance Amanda's new ad agency. Since when does Peter have money again? He lost his house one season ago. Where did he have this money from?
Where does he even live also? Does he just live like at that little hut at the ninth hole of the golf course where people go to pee and get a snack?
No, he lives in the condo.
But that's not what he lost that though, didn't he?
No, he didn't lose the condo. The condo's where he moved after he got divorced from Amanda. He had the house that was like that ranch house that we saw there.
Oh, right. That thing. Okay. Yeah.
Remember
that is the writers.
The condo that Taylor was pounding on the glass doors, as we saw in the visual aids. Taylor, you just asked to go outside. Billy says, if he pulls this shit off, Craig will be fucked because the employees will all go back to Amanda. The clients will follow. Sky High will collapse. Business. So hard right now. All of this is so preposterous. It's been
insane.
Perhaps 10 days. Like, truly, maybe. You have not even gotten your paperwork back from the state of California about incorporating this venture.
You absolutely haven't. You don't have phones. You don't have anything.
You don't have money. No one's gotten paid yet. Anyway, Sam speaks up for Craig. He just lost Sydney, so it would be cruel for Billy and company to take Craig's business too. Again, what business? But Billy doesn't care, and he feels Sam shouldn't either, given the way that Craig has treated them both, because Billy doesn't know that they're cool with each other now. So in order to remind us about that, as soon as Billy has gone, Sam runs over to Sydney's old place, where Craig is still living, even though none of his stuff is there, to say she didn't tell Billy about Craig nearly running her over, and she doesn't want Craig to tell Billy that either. Why would he? Craig's reply, classic Craig, clip two.
I won't say anything, but Sam, I was wrong to blame you for Cindy's death.
Oh, it's Cindy now. Okay, great.
This is the third episode of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just a reminder.
Yep.
He's been saying it wrong longer than they were married. Yeah. By like a factor of 20. It's amazing.
It's true. As Sam is visibly deciding whether to warn Craig about Billy's plans, Craig adds that he was wrong to take his anger out on Billy, and he intends to make it up to both Billy and Sam. Sam says he already has, and they're hugging when Jennifer walks in and snidely asks whether anyone can get in on this. So after Sam has hustled off, Jennifer notes that Sam seemed nervous, but Craig just wants to get rid of Jennifer as quickly as possible. Jennifer just wanted to make sure he got home okay since he was pretty loaded at the club. He was, because we did not see that. I guess that was a scene when an actual jazz artist was performing and they had to cut it from the DVDs. Because
that's a shame.
Indeed. Craig doesn't want to be friends with Jennifer and kicks her out. But before she leaves, Jennifer intones that while they may not be friends, they are lovers and nothing can change that.
Jennifer. Come on, man.
We all barf. Over breakfast, Billy presents Peter with a prospectus that, I'm sorry, I do not believe Billy is capable of crafting alone or with help. Clip three.
So the bottom number on this spreadsheet, that's the startup capital Amanda's going to need to launch her own agency.
Yeah. Assuming a staff of 30, offices on the west side, and at least 50% of the clients she lost to Sky High would come back. I did a little logo for you.
Amanda Woodward Advertising. I like it. I'm sure Amanda will, too.
You can keep it along with the documents there. I made copies. So, Peter, does Amanda know about any of this? Last I heard, you guys weren't exactly on speaking terms.
To be honest with you, Bill, she doesn't. And I really don't want you saying anything to her just yet.
Okay. You are planning on telling her. I didn't pull an all-nighter for nothing.
The only thing stopping Amanda's money. But I'm sure she'll go for this. You can just leave Amanda to me.
Okay. The logo that Billy created for this. Now, Billy was hired as a writer. We have never been given to understand he has design skills. And we still don't know that he does because what he shows Peter looks like he drew it with a ballpoint pen. Like, he did not make this on a computer.
Yeah, and yet manages to be kerned weirdly. I mean, like, fine. Mm-hmm. Logo. But, oh, Jesus. It's like, all Amanda needs is money. Based on Sky High, she didn't even need that.
That's right. Yes. So Billy gets to Sky High, hustling to hide the folder from his illicit meeting as Craig follows him into his office. Not to yell at him for being a half hour late, but to apologize. He promises they'll be partners down the road, and Billy hedges that for now they can take things one day at a time. Well done, Billy. The next day, Megan's at her desk at the practice when she overhears Peter confirming with, presumably, his accountant that some of his money is getting moved around. So she confronts him about pulling a fast one on Michael. He tries to dismiss her, but eventually admits what the money is actually for. Clip four.
Oh, I get it. Now that you and Taylor are past tense, you want Amanda back. Oh, that is such a guy thing.
A guy thing?
Peter, if you have feelings for Amanda, just tell her. Don't try to buy her love. Money only buys you a warm body and a cold heart.
Well, you should know, huh?
Look, if you don't want my advice, fine. Just don't insult me.
Megan, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I was out of line.
Wow, miracle.
Yeah, but when this happens, he gets really close to her as he apologizes. And she does this, like, flirty smile, looking down and sort of, like, cocking her head to the side. I'm not sure if we're supposed to see track being laid for them to get together or if that's just, like, they're both just flirty. But, you know, can see in the visual aids because I cut the moment that I'm talking about. It was interesting. I made a note.
Yeah. And I think she looks at his lips also, which is like, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. Go for it.
Seriously. So, someone should be fucking this guy. I think we can all agree.
Really?
Over to Sky High. Craig needs a file from Billy, but Billy's on his way to a client meeting, so Craig will just check on Billy's desk and also the file cabinet, and you'll never guess what folder he finds. Craig is sad. And that night, Craig startles Sam in the laundry room, checking that Billy's not around before pumping her for information about this new agency plot. Sam badly pretends not to know anything about it, so he gets in her face and grabs her arm hard enough to make her wince, as you can see in the visual aids, telling her that after everything they've been through together, she owes him the truth, so she spills. Craig claims he knew Amanda was going to pull something like this, which is curious considering how unprepared he seems to be. And as Craig wanders off to do something, Sam begs him not to tell Billy that she talked. Clip five.
Don't worry, Sam, I won't name names. But I'm never going to let anybody, especially Amanda Woodward, steal Sydney's and my company.
Okay, sorry, whose? I almost heard a D in that one, but I still clipped it.
Yeah, not quite. Not quite. Getting closer.
The next day.
The company you two built that had existed for, what, 48 hours before she died?
Yeah, which... I mean, we kept hearing about that fucking honeymoon, by the way. Like, you started this thing and then you were going to fuck off for 2 weeks immediately afterwards. Who was going to run things while you were gone? I mean, it doesn't matter because neither of you knew how to run things anyway. But still, like, all of this is so playtime. It's actually ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, just let it go. Just let vines grow over it.
Yeah. Like, we know you're not losing any money. Because you had none to invest in this thing. The next day, Craig has asked Billy to play racquetball as a pretext to map out a strategy to counter whatever Amanda may be planning against them. Billy says he thinks Amanda's enjoying running the jazz club, so they don't need to bother. Craig snits that he's going back to the office, and when Billy gets there, he should clean out his desk because he's fired. Craig should, by the way, he should start doing this to everyone now before 2 weeks are up and they all expect to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretext for a pretext as Craig directly confronts Billy about the file that he found, and Billy readily admits to everything. And he also is not sorry because Craig doesn't have what it takes to run an agency. Dude, this is not the burn you think it is. You're the one who followed him and jumped on board this sinking ship, you idiot. But on his way off the court, we get this, clip six.
I think these are your balls.
Okay, come on. So stupid.
I didn't hate it.
I didn't either. There's a picture in the visual aids. Peter and Amanda are dining out together. She does not know why. He claims he just misses talking to her and having her in his life. So, hey, what about that new agency you were talking about? She does not have the money, although she admits she could sell the complex. And Peter stops her right there. He's going to give her the money, no strings attached. And he's already gotten Billy to spec out a plan. Their seed money is $150,000, which, LOL, even in 1997, this would be like her salary. Like,
yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. But leaving that aside, obviously she is suspicious. Clip seven.
So I'm supposed to believe that you're my happiness guru. I know you. I know you. I mean, you never do anything unless you get something out of it.
Okay. Maybe I do want something. I want you to quit looking at me as the enemy. I want to try to get back what we had. I mean, is that so terrible?
Yes, because the bottom line is you're offering me money to get me in bed with you.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all here. And that's not all that we had together either, you know. I love you. I've never stopped loving you, and I want you to give us a second chance.
As far as I'm concerned, we had a second chance, and a third, and a fourth. We are not getting back together, ever. So you can keep your money, because whatever I need, it's a lot more than you're offering. I'll find it someplace else.
Don't say you're never getting back together. Come on.
Come on. You're
Come
killing
on.
Us.
You really are.
I mean, and you could hear it in her voice when she's like, I know you, that it's like, yeah you do.
You
so
do.
Just get back together. You broke him out of a mental hospital, for God's sake. This is nothing. This is a bagatelle.
Over to the complex the next night, Amanda slips out of bed and calls her old pal Eric from the season premiere in New York. He hopes she's calling to say she changed her mind about the job, but it's not that, she says, just as Kyle appears in the doorway behind her. She needs Eric's help, and it's a big ask. She's opening her own agency, and if he'll give her the seed money, she'll make it worth his while. And Eric immediately says that she can count on him. And when she has hung up, Kyle looms over her to ask who was on the phone. Eric's just an old friend and colleague. Does she call all her old friends at 2 a.m.? Well, it's 5 a.m. in New York, so she knows that he was already up to go jogging. Sicko shit.
Yeah, seriously. I was just going to say, is he a cop?
Yeah. Kyle's like, you know that how? And chuckling, Amanda says Kyle has no reason to be jealous. She only needs Eric's money for her new agency. And if that's all it is, Kyle says he'll sell Kyle's East, which seems like you could have done that to finance your own jazz club, too, if it was an option, dude. But instead of saying that, Amanda asks if the place is worth $500,000. Starting small is not her. To be bigger and better than everyone else in town, she needs to borrow the money from Peter or Eric. Kyle squints. So then she has to tell him about Peter's offer. She would have said something to Kyle before, but then they fucked instead. Again, believable. And
yeah.
Kyle decides to be okay with this as long as it is just business, which Amanda promises it is. But as Kyle rolls over, he looks like he's going to barf. And at the jazz club the next night, Kyle storms over to his old bestie Peter and announces that Peter is not welcome there. Clip 8.
Relax. I'm not looking for any trouble.
No, you're just looking for Amanda.
For the record, there's nothing going on between me and my ex.
Offering Amanda $150,000 to start her own advertising agency doesn't qualify as nothing.
All it does if it was offered and then refused.
This one's on the house. Get out.
Ooh.
How did I get to be the bad guy here? You're the one who goes home with Amanda every night.
And he's also the one who's pouring perfectly good brown liquor on the ground in that scene. Like, hey, dickhead.
Seriously.
How are you? Like, how is business up 20% when you're just pouring booze on the ground? I ask you.
I mean, maybe he's marking them up nice and good. So he knows he has a little bit to spare, but still, it's a dumb gesture. Just drink it yourself.
Peter's not going to be drinking well scotch. Come on.
It's true.
Sigh.
Finally, our A plot. Coop joins the chaos at and around the Burns Mancini medical practice. After some B-roll that does seem current to fall 1997 based on all of the slide shoes in evidence, you can see that in the visual aids, we are at the beach house where Michael and his exposed fingies are struggling with his tie before work. Jennifer shows up to drive him to the office. He immediately starts complaining that she's late, and she yells back that he needs to appreciate her for doing him all these favors, including calling the hospital for him. But the number that she dials is her own to make him have to talk to Megan. who politely asks how Michael is doing. Jennifer holds up a sign ordering Michael to invite Megan for dinner, which he does, adding that it's the only way he'll get to eat since he can't feed himself. And Megan briefly pretends she's not going to accept, but then she does. Over to a fertility clinic, Michael walks an inappropriately dressed Taylor through the process, and she says this, clip 9.
Yuck.
What?
I mean, I am determined to get pregnant and get Kyle back, Michael, but just the idea of thousands of vials of frozen sperm incubating behind these doors, well, it just kind of takes the fun out of sex.
Well, it's not about sex, Taylor. It's about achieving pregnancy with a selected donor.
Oh, well, I've been thinking about that part, too. This donor guy, he should either be from Stanford, Harvard, or Yale. I want a professional. Doctor, lawyer, or he could be an artist, too.
Look, excuse me, Taylor, but the idea here is to achieve pregnancy with a donor with characteristics similar to Kyle's. So that means you should be looking for an ex-Marine jarhead grill cook with a high school education and a Jones for Jazz.
Okay. Now it's my turn to say yuck. This was the stupid Taylor that I was referring to in earlier episodes. I refuse to believe she's dumb enough to have thought this was going to be romantic at all. And B, she would not be laser focused on getting pregnant immediately, no matter fucking what. Like, her whole plot depends on it.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Come on. Yeah. And again, I have to say, as I mentioned in the last episode, if this is the play, like, arrange a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Like, do the other part of the scheme and worry about the actual testing part later.
Right.
Just keep bluffing. It's fine.
Yeah. The problem is, like, you know, the math problem. Like, as you said, even Kyle is going to do some, like, back of the envelope ciphering and figure out, like, you should be showing by now if it's from the last time we fucked, because that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Back at the practice, Peter arrives to see Coop there talking to a contractor about knocking out a wall and is like, who the fuck? Because Peter has not had an opportunity to meet Coop in the past two episodes. Megan makes introductions and explains that Coop is Peter's new partner because, of course, it's news to Megan that Michael extended the invitation unilaterally. Coop is sorry Peter is finding out this way, but Michael already had him sign paperwork, which is when Michael himself arrives. Peter tells Michael that whatever he's up to, he's not going to get away with it. Michael brings Coop into his office to assure him that everything's going to be fine once the two of them join forces to push Peter out. And that night, Kyle and Amanda get back to the courtyard, horny as hell, but before they can bone, Kyle has to go check on Taylor. Amanda's sarcastic about Taylor having round-the-clock morning sickness, which we know that she doesn't, but people do. Mm-hmm. And when Kyle tells Amanda to give Taylor a break, Amanda's basically like, no, and then watches from her stairs as Taylor purrs at Kyle to come in. And then inside, like, there's papers all over every surface. Like, it's never explained what they even are. But they're everywhere. Like, it's so weird. Like, give her some other business to do. But anyway, she claims she's been on her back all day and that her doctors told her to expect that to last for at least the first 3 months. She's unprepared for Kyle to ask what else the doctor says, like her due date, and claims that it'll be mid-February. And then, when it seems like he's trying to do some of that math in his head, she pretends that she is tired. And when he promises again she will not have to go through this alone and makes his exit, she leans against the door in ecstasy. And the next morning, Jennifer drops off her rent check to Amanda, informs her that Megan is staying with her temporarily. Kyle walks out between them on his way to open Kyle's for Taylor, and Jennifer says this, clip 10.
The man has never looked better. Taylor is pregnant and Kyle is glowing.
No, he's just happy and satisfied for the first time in his life.
You know, Amanda, I gotta hand it to you. You're a better person than I am. I mean, letting Taylor live here in your building, especially now that she's with child, Kyle's child. I don't know, is that better or worse than having it be your ex-husband's? Anyway, more power to you. Have a nice day.
I mean, do we have to recap all of this stuff still on episode 3? I guess we do.
I guess. After Peter walks out of the practice past Coop and passive aggresses about the construction and the name being changed on the door, Coop comments to Megan that Peter really doesn't like him, and she's basically like, ignore him. Also, your wife called three times. Clip 11.
Oh, actually, that's my shrew of an ex-wife, and I really don't want to talk to her. So if you could just keep taking messages, I'd appreciate it.
Not a problem, doctor.
Great. Hey, did my files arrive from Cleveland?
No, not yet, but I ordered you some new filing cabinets, and as soon as your files get here, I'll make sure they get put away.
No. What I mean is, I just want to go through them first, make sure everything is there. All right? Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Get it rolling. Everyone else is going bonkers already. You're boring.
Yeah.
Start acting out. Thanks.
Yeah, there's about to be drama about files. Okay. That night, we rejoin Michael and Megan over dinner at Kyle's, where Michael's petting her forearm as she pretends to want him to stop. Electricity isn't the problem between them. It's honesty and trust. And Michael insists he's a changed man. Looking at his bandages reminds him of the error of his old ways. But what about Coop? It's not enough for Megan anymore that Michael apologized. There is a way he can get back in her good graces, but she doesn't think he'll want to do it. It's couples therapy. And he immediately agrees, thinking that Megan doesn't really mean it, but she's already made them an appointment. And then they can't discuss it further because Taylor runs over claiming she needs a doctor to address a complication in her pregnancy. Michael tells her to make an appointment so his dinner doesn't get cold. And Megan is like, she wants you to talk to her right now. Taylor pulls him away to speak in private in the ladies' room, which is when we find out the emergency is a positive home ovulation test. Taylor's most fertile time this month is in the next few days, so she needs the frozen sperm now. Michael will fudge her tests and handle it, and then goes back to the table while Taylor stays in the can and celebrates. And they totally did not check whether anyone else is in there, but I guess they got lucky because we don't see anyone come out being like, what? And right after the commercial, Michael and Megan are in therapy. They're doing it with Dr. Louis Visconti, who in the season 5 finale was a neurologist. But as we know from this show, any kind of doctor can do therapy and it is mm-hmm. no big deal and totally fine.
Yep. He learned a lot from being the manager of the Bellage.
That's right. So Michael complains that Megan never believes anything he tells her, and she says that's because he lies all the time. So he says their relationship was based on a lie she cooked up with Kimberly, to which she says she came clean and hasn't lied since then, which, untrue, she lied about Josh the pimp.
Yep.
Michael claims he hasn't lied since then either. Obviously untrue. She needs more than words from him. She needs action. So Dr. V breaks in to say that since trust is an obstacle in their relationship, they should try and exercise total honesty for the next 48 hours. Oh, boy. This is a I Love Lucy plot in the making.
Mm-hmm.
At the beach house the next night, Michael's trying to go meet Megan for another date when Taylor pounces on him. Her life is going to hell. A pipe burst at the clinic, and now it's closed for a week. She's only fertile for another 72 hours, and she can't get set up in another clinic in time. And if they wait another month, Kyle will know it's not his baby! She has to get pregnant tonight. So trying to usher her out, Michael tells her to seduce a dude at a bar and hope he doesn't have any diseases. Or, clip 12.
Wait a minute. I got a better idea. Have sex with me, Michael.
No. Maybe you didn't understand me. I'm reconciling with Megan.
Oh, how long has it been since you two have been intimate?
No.
Oh, I bet you're pretty frustrated, aren't you?
No. Look, I have to be there in 20 minutes. Not to mention the fact that as a therapy exercise, we've agreed to be perfectly honest with each other for 48 hours.
Michael, listen, I don't want a relationship. I don't want a commitment. I need your sperm.
Oh, you can't have them.
Shut up and give it your best shot.
No. Oh.
I mean, this is not great from a consent perspective.
No.
But again, the show has established that Michael is a slut, so I guess.
Yeah. This is also after he offered to overnight some sperm to her apartment. So
yeah.
Yeah, we're not being set up to see him as a victim, which he may be, but, you know, this is also like we're well into like an attempt at French farce now, which, OK, go off show.
Yeah, true. The next morning, Michael shows up at Jennifer's 12 hours late for his would-have-been date with Megan. And given that they're in the middle of their 48 hours of honesty, Megan is very interested to hear what Michael's going to try to say to weasel out of this one. Well, here goes. Clip 13.
Well, honey, I wanted to be with you.
But?
But, well, there was a medical emergency. I had a... squeeze in a patient with a gland problem, and it took all night. I mean, it was a touch and go situation, and I never heard moaning like that. I couldn't get to a phone, and then I made the mistake of lying down, and I fell asleep. I'm so sorry. Do you ever forgive me?
I want to, but that's some story.
I know, but Megan, I swear every word of it is true.
Michael, I want to believe you. I really do. But, you know, you make it difficult. You can't even say good morning without lying. It's a compulsion.
I never, never, ever lied to you about my feelings for you. You are the only woman for me. The only one who's ever made me happy.
Michael, I do believe you.
You know, I guess what they say is true. Honesty is the best policy.
This stupid woman, honestly, but...
I mean, yeah.
That said, someone was very proud of themselves for writing all of that technically true explanation.
Yeah.
And they should be. That was not bad.
It wasn't. I wish that it had been directed in such a way that it's not quite so obvious to anyone that he's lying.
Yes.
Like, we know that he is. We saw it. So you don't have to do this, like, tipping it to the camera, like, I mean, he had hours to think of all of this technically true shit.
Yes.
And learn to recite it believably because he is a sociopath. Hello? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's TV. Liars have to be bad liars, so we understand. Mm-hmm. But,
yep.
You know, it's a trope. Mm-hmm. Michael tries to start fooling around, which is assuming a lot. Like, Taylor did all the work with his non-workable hands, but Megan may not. And regardless, she's not ready to get back into bed with him for presumably other reasons than, you know, lazy. Over to the practice. Coop is the first to arrive and sees a note from Megan that his files are in Michael's office. And when he opens the box, he goes straight for Kimberly's. Before he can look into it to remind himself what's in it, I guess, Megan arrives and offers to help Coop deal with everything over his strenuous objections. And when she picks up the one that he drops in his panic, she sees the name and is like, "This bitch again?" Just kidding. She says this, clip 14.
"And you, Kimberly?"
"Yeah, I treated her back in Ohio after a car accident."
"Did you know that she was married to Michael? She was on the staff here at Wilshire Memorial?"
No, I mean, I knew that she had moved back to California and that she'd married her fiancé, who was also a doctor. But, I mean, I had no idea that that doctor was Michael until the other day when I heard him talking to a colleague about his dead wife. I mean, what a bizarre coincidence, right?"
"Yeah, it's like one of those 6 degrees of separation things. But, why didn't you say anything? Why are you trying to hide her file?"
"Megan, I'm not trying to hide anything."
"Well, Michael has a right to know. I really think you should tell him."
"And I will. I just want to pick the time. It's a lot to lay on the guy. So I'd appreciate it if you didn't say anything."
"You know, I hate to keep things from Michael, but, Kimberly was a good friend of mine. And I think that she would be pleased to know that fate brought the two of you together. So, yeah, I'll keep your secret for now. But if I were you, I'd find a way to tell Michael."
Okay, again, get on with it.
Yeah.
Peter's on his way out of the jazz club through Kyle's, having been kicked out, as we already discussed, when he notices Coop sitting at the bar bitching someone out on his cellular phone. When he hangs up, he sheepishly tells Peter it was his ex-wife. Clip 15.
"I have one of those. Mind if I join you?"
"Please."
"Scotch, neat."
"All right. Another bourbon and water.
Coming right up."
"So, your wife try and take you for everything like my shrew of an ex-wife did?"
No, Amanda. God. She just wanted to be rid of me.
You don't still have feelings for her, do you?
Ask me next week.
Oh, man, you got it bad. I know what that's like. I only felt that way about one woman. Now she's dead.
No, I have one of those, too. A much-adored dead wife.
Yeah, she wasn't my wife. But I wanted her to be. Tell you what, a toast to the women we've loved and lost.
Here, here. When Michael said he was bringing another partner into the practice, I sort of had this knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, you didn't like me.
Right. But now I'm starting to think that having another partner may not be so bad. Two against one is never bad, right?
I think I've heard that somewhere before. Yeah, two against one.
All right.
Sure.
I mean, if you're going to be this guy, you might as well play both sides against the middle. If they're just volunteering to give you this position without knowing literally anything about you.
Yeah.
At the hospital. At the hospital, Michael enters his office to find Taylor sitting with her feet up on his desk. Between her sexual demands and his job, he's exhausted. And then we're supposed to think it's funny that Taylor basically sexually assaults Michael while he says no, 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 because he's a man and a scumbag, and she's been well established as a horny woman and also kind of a scumbag. And yeah, because she does seem to convince him just before the blackout as he kisses her back, but it's not actually that funny, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't like that this character keeps ending up, like, they're kind of leaving a lot to our assumptions vis-a-vis consent. Like, that she seems to have wanted to have sex with Peter at whatever cost does not make it okay the way he behaved towards her. And now that the shoe's on the other foot or on the ground or wherever it is, still not okay. It's like, this is not funny or cute the way it's being played. And it wasn't sexy before. So they need to figure that out a little better, I would say.
And that's where we leave things for this week. Let's name our episode MVP.
I mean, I would say Taylor, because she's being schemey and getting some of that sweet Michael D, but see our immediately previous comments. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, Jennifer's plan is still on pace, going the way she wants it to, and she has not assaulted anyone that we've seen, so let's say her.
Yeah, and she's not a moron. So, yeah, Jennifer Mancini. Fine.
Least valuable player.
Amanda?
Yeah.
I mean, get back together with Peter, and if you're not going to do that, don't call this Eric Bozo.
Yeah.
And also, Kyle sort of sucks.
Kyle's not
maybe don't be throwing the L word around with this guy. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, she's not her best self, that's for sure.
No. Next time on Again With This, Jennifer applies way more scheme to Craig than that bonehead requires, Michael finds himself in a Brandon Walsh in Washington situation, and Mrs. Coop wants to visit the Burns unit, if you know what I mean. I mean, she wants to bone Peter. You should visit your local drugstore's digestive health aisle before you check out our visual aids. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. We're also on Twitter at AWT90210, or grab your cellular telephone and give us a call at 210-920-4699. It's your last chance before our next call-in episode, so leave us a message or text us and let us know if it's okay to use your audio. Also, our Patreon page. There is a ton of extra content, patreon.com/againwiththis. That includes our monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast, which you can hear if you're a supporter at the $5 level or higher, and access to our Discord. Come hang out with us. I'm your balls, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Instagram at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is bottom number, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Jones for Jazz, David T. Cole. Someone had to be that. I'm fired. Avenge me. Talk to you next time. Bean it, ding ding dong.